This is Prop Point on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome into Prop Points here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Nick Whalen, Brandon Kravitz back with you for the next hour. We got a great show coming your way. Of course, going to recap Game 7 of the NBA Finals. Congratulations to the Oklahoma City Thunder. They clinched the NBA title last night. We'll talk about our biggest takeaways from the game, our biggest takeaways from the series, the playoffs overall, and of course, what the Tyrese Haliburton injury means for the Indiana Pacers and the Eastern Conference at large, looking ahead to next season. Wasn't just the NBA Finals yesterday, Brandon. We had a big trade in the NBA. We'll talk Kevin Durant to the Rockets later in the show. Eric Halterman, our guy from RotoWire, he's going to stop by with his best bets for tonight's Major League Baseball slate. We'll get into some fantasy football talk to close out the show. Some of our guys, the players that we already know we're going to be targeting in plenty of fantasy football leagues this season. Well, let's start with Game 7, Brandon. OKC, a 103-91 win last night. Another offensive grind, really, for both teams. But again, for OKC, they've had a few of those in this series. Congrats, of course, to all of our VSiN viewers and listeners who had a futures ticket on OKC to win the finals. You know, Brandon, obviously the Thunder deserve a ton of credit. The Indiana Pacers, I think, deserve maybe even more credit for making this a seven-game series. I did not see a single expert, a single prognosticator before this series started who had this going longer than six games. And honestly, most of the predictions I saw were Thunder in five.
You can probably just copy and paste that to every series that Indiana was in throughout the course of the playoffs. It doesn't feel like the picking public, the sharps, the NBA analysts, nobody got this team right throughout the course of the postseason. That's what made them so much fun to follow all the way throughout. I do want to push back on one thing that you just said, is that we're going to give more credit to Indiana. No, we give more credit to OKC. They still won the championship. Tyrese Haliburton went down. It was awful and unfortunate what happened to him, even if we could see it coming from a mile away. I feel like what we saw in the third quarter was so indicative of what the Oklahoma City Thunder have been throughout the course of the season, where they just clamped down defensively. You can't score. They had 11 more shot attempts in that third quarter, ton of turnovers, 18 points off of those turnovers in the third frame. And I am of the belief, Nick, and I'm curious to get your perspective on this, that even if Haliburton hadn't gone down with that injury in the first quarter, that this is still what the game would have looked like at the end. Maybe the Pacers lose by a couple less points. Maybe it's in single digits rather than double digits. But to me, OKC was going to win this game either way.
I think I'm with you on that, partially because of the way that they were able to ramp up the defensive pressure in the second half. You know, I think the way this game finished, you forget that the Pacers were still leading this game at the half, right? Andrew Nembhard splashed in that step back three, and, you know, OKC is going to the halftime locker room once again searching for answers offensively. Felt like they missed every wide open three possible in the first half, especially in the second quarter. There was like a five possession stretch where I think Caruso, Jay Will, and Chet Holmgren all missed wide open threes. And that had been kind of the common thread. Anytime the Thunder had struggled in this series, you look up and it's like, well, we're 2 of 11 from beyond the arc, and the Pacers are 5 of 10. And that was kind of how they were able to, you know, keep this game and keep this series, you know, close throughout. But I don't know, man. Tyrese Haliburton, before going down, was 3 of 4 from beyond the arc. He was clearly hunting his shot early in the game to a degree that we had not really seen from him in this series. Yeah, you know, he was picking up confidence. He's chirping at the fans in the front row. I don't think it's a given to me that the Thunder win this game. I would take them to win. I certainly think it would be closer. The real hero here for Indiana, Brandon, might be TJ McConnell. I think he's the one who bailed this out in terms of turning into a true blowout, right? It was yet another game in the series where I at least found myself thinking, how is OKC not up 20 right now? How are they not up 25 right now? It feels like the Pacers can't hit a shot. It feels like they're turning it over left and right. The shooting is starting to come around. Jalen Williams was great in the second half after scoring just 5 points in the first. The Pacers went 13 minutes, Brandon, 13 minutes, getting no points from anyone other than TJ McConnell. And this was still, you know, in the balance in the fourth quarter.
As somebody who was sitting on a bad CLV Thunder -8 ticket that I bet way too early,
oh boy,
I could not have been more annoyed by the presence of TJ McConnell in the third quarter. Every time the Oklahoma City Thunder would stretch their lead out to double digits, here comes TJ to cut it down to six. I'm like, will this guy please go away? all the credit in the world. And next year is going to be huge for him. Talk about a breakout season to come for TJ McConnell, as if this postseason wasn't enough of that already. But going back to that first half, and I've heard people say this, it's driving me crazy that, well, the Pacers had a lead at the end of the first half. Like, that's some indication that they were going to win the game. Have we not watched the NBA all season for the last several seasons? Having a 1-point lead at halftime means literally nothing in this league. Yes, Indiana played well in that first half, and Tyrese Halliburton was red hot while he was out there. But what was he hot doing? Settling for 3-point shots that were well beyond the arc because he couldn't drive. The calf was still an issue. Yeah. And I think the biggest mistake that we as an NBA or betting media made going into this game was not making as big a deal about the calf injury going into game 7 as we did going into game 6. It's as if because he made it through game 6, we went, poof, right. Hey, the calf injury's gone. That's not the way that this works. It was still an issue. And the second he tried to drive to the basket, pop goes the Achilles. It was, I think eventually OKC was going to catch up to the fact that all Tyrese Halliburton was going to do is jack up threes and pass the basketball. And I still think the result would have been the same at the end of the day.
I think you're right. I think you're right. You lay out a compelling case. I think the shooting had to come around for OKC, and it did. That was the big thing, right? They went 4 of 18 from beyond the arc in the first half. If they go 4 of 18 in the second half, maybe without Tyrese Halliburton, this is a 1 or 2 possession game. To me, that was the single biggest factor, because I think we know that the defense was going to be there. We've seen them flip that switch in the second half multiple times throughout this series. I did think it was notable, Brandon, before we move on to talk a little bit more about Halliburton. Indiana outshot the Thunder last night from the field, from three, and from the free throw line in terms of percentage. They also outshot the Thunder for the series in terms of field goal percentage and 3-point percentage. Turnovers obviously were the key. 88 turnovers in this series for OKC. That comes out to about 12 per game. 120 for Indiana. Over 17 turnovers per game for the Pacers. 23 last night. Thunder turned those into 32 points off of turnovers. I just mentioned OKC didn't shoot it that well. They're hovering around 40%. From the field, or around 30% from three. They attempted 17 more shots than Indiana did.
Defense was always going to win the game in game 7. Indiana's 91 points, the lowest for their team throughout the course of the postseason. That's what makes me so confident in saying that no matter what happened with the injury, OKC was going to win this game because they had the better defense. Also, I went back and looked at this. Every single game in this series outside of game 1 told a very specific story. If you turn the ball over more than your competition, you lost the game. Mm-hmm. Game 1 was the only game where the team that committed more turnovers than their opponent actually won the game. And that was also due to the fact that Indiana just got hot in the last couple of minutes. But that was the story of this series, is if you can limit your turnovers and force your opponent to turn the ball over, you win the game. And that's what OKC is good at. So when they weren't coughing the ball up like they did in game 6, they were still the better team in this series.
Folks, are you still using your buddy's gut instinct as your betting strategy? Come on, you deserve better than that. RotoWire has the real tools the pros use. We're talking rankings, projections, updates, data that doesn't sleep. Whether you're making picks, setting your fantasy lineup, or placing bets, our award-winning insights give you the edge you need. You can get started today by heading over to rotowire.com and entering the code ROTO15, ROTO15. Put that in at checkout. You get 15% off any of our products over at rotowire.com. All right, Brandon, let's talk a little bit more about Tyrese Halliburton. We did get the official confirmation. I know his dad confirmed it mid-game last night, but Shams Charania tweeted earlier this morning, it is indeed a torn right Achilles tendon for Tyrese Halliburton. Concerning NBA trend at large developing here, obviously we saw Jason Tatum and Damian Lillard go down with the same injury earlier in the playoffs. This is reminiscent of Kevin Durant coming back from the calf injury back in the 2019 finals, tearing the Achilles, missed the entire 2020 season. Our guy who writes for us at RotoWire, Jeff Stotts, at In Street Clothes on Twitter, put out last night that we set a new NBA record this season now with 8 torn Achilles. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see how teams handle these calf injuries next season. Is it an extra week? Is it an extra couple weeks? I think we're going to see an abundance of caution anytime a player is dealing with a calf strain, specifically given the link between these two injuries. But honestly, Brandon, it's hard not to think about what this means for Indiana next season. Obviously, you lose the finals last night, but you're thinking, all right, you know, we feel like we might be the best team in the Eastern Conference next year, especially with no Jason Tatum, especially with no Damian Lillard. I mean, now you take Halliburton away, conceivably for at least the regular season. The East was wide open going into last night. It is now as wide open as it gets in my eyes.
Big time. There's a big conversation to be had about what favorites should look like, what the numbers should look like, some long shot options that may actually have a chance to cash given how wide open things are right now. But I think Indiana's run has ended. And I was going to feel that way either way. I was just going to be less confident in that opinion with Tyrese Halliburton out there and healthy. But without him, it's hard to make it back to the conference finals or the NBA finals without your best player. Awful to see. This is not the way that I wanted to see the Eastern Conference opened up, but it does allow an opportunity for some other teams to potentially get even more aggressive as we get into the offseason.
Yeah, Pacers now 12-1 to win the Eastern Conference over at the DraftKings Sportsbook. They were hanging around in that plus 300, plus 400 range prior to last night. Cavs still installed as the favorites right now, plus 255. Knicks, plus 295. Hate to say it, Brandon, but you're Orlando Magic. I think looking like they're in good shape right now after swinging that Desmond Bain trade last week. Orlando now 6-1 to win the East. And you do wonder, you know, is this in the head of the Milwaukee Bucks? Does this perhaps impact how they will handle Giannis this offseason, with the East looking very much up for the taking next season? We got to head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about a big trade in the NBA yesterday morning. Kevin Durant, now a Houston Rocket. What do their odds look like to win the West? Are they the top contender behind OKC? We'll tell you on the other side, coming up next on Prop Points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Prop Points rolling along here on VSiN, the sports betting network. Nick Whalen, Brandon Kravitz hanging out with you. Big news in the NBA yesterday morning, Brandon, as I was in a very hot RV driving back from southern Missouri up to Milwaukee. We had a couple guys, you know, just kind of jumping around in the RV, like, did you check your phone? Did you check your phone? Kevin Durant got traded. It felt like this was happening at some point before the draft. You know, I think if anything, maybe the Suns feel like they were a little bit too public about their interest in trading KD, and we'll get to the package in a moment. But for this to happen the morning of Game 7, you know, 3 days before the NBA draft, a major, major domino falling in the NBA. By the way, had you bet on this market, Kevin Durant next team, it was available at most major books. Rockets were plus 150 heading into yesterday, plus 350, excuse me, same price as the Minnesota Timberwolves over at the DK Sportsbook. So ultimately, the Phoenix Suns send Kevin Durant to the Houston Rockets. They get back Jalen Green. They get back Dylan Brooks. They get the 10th overall pick in Wednesday night's draft. They get 5 second rounders on top of that. I will tell you, Brandon, most of the reaction that I've seen, that I've read when I was doing my research yesterday, everybody's crushing the Phoenix Suns for this deal. Are you in agreement?
I think the thought is this. It all comes down to how you look at Jalen Green. However good you think Jalen Green is how you should judge this deal. If you're not a believer, this trade is terrible. The 10th pick is nice, but a slew of seconds when the Rockets own a 2027 Phoenix pick and a 2029 pick swap with Phoenix. It feels like they could have done better, but I'm good with it because I like Jalen Green. I think he needs a lot of maturing, but there aren't a lot of guys around the NBA that are as talented as Jalen Green is. And that's the kind of thing that in the NBA draft, you're trying to ascertain, and he's got it. So KD also, this is a big part of this deal that often gets left out of discussions, is that his contract needs to be redone. He's an unrestricted free agent at the end of this next season, and he's not cheap. He's also not young. So this isn't as clean as the Desmond Bane deal in that regard, because Desmond Bane is 26 years old and has another 4 years left on his contract. Not only are you trading for Kevin Durant, you're also saying, we'll take Kevin Durant. Now we have to negotiate with a guy that's on his fifth team in his NBA career. I think that there's a lot more to it than just player for player, picks for picks. I like Jalen Green, so I'm not I think the Suns did fine. Like they didn't crush it, but I think they did fine.
Yeah. I think they did about as well as they could have, given what we know about how the Durant market was shaping up, or really the lack thereof of a Kevin Durant market. And look, as soon as KD puts three teams out there, look, I want to go to the Spurs, I want to go to the Rockets, or I want to go to the Miami Heat. We know how this works, especially with a player of KD's ilk, the kind of sway that he carries. You know, I think it's easy for the team to say, well, that's all well and good. We're still going to send you to the best offer. Well, when that player is an unrestricted free agent at the end of next season, and all of a sudden you're talking about putting real assets on the table for a guy who, one, might not ever be happy to be there, who is a bit mercurial in his own right, and two, could leave after one season, I think that's going to shape the type of offers you're getting, right? I mean, the reporting out of this, was that San Antonio never really made a real offer. I don't think they were going to put anybody the caliber of Jalen Green in terms of their young assets on the table. Miami allegedly was not even willing to throw Jaime Jaquez or Nikola Jovic or Khalil Ware in the deal. So to me, they were not a serious player. I mean, I get the sense that Phoenix was essentially negotiating exclusively with the Houston Rockets. And look, I get that, you know, Houston owns two of those future picks. It's egregious in some ways that the Suns did not get at least one of those, even if you have to protect it or put something on it to sweeten the deal for Houston. But to not get Jabari Smith, to not even pry away Atari Eason, to not, you know, maybe get Reed Shepard in this deal. I know Phoenix is operating from a position of almost no leverage, and the fact that they don't own any of their future draft capital means that you want to get, you know, some win now pieces in the door. I don't know if Jalen Green is that guy. I guess you could say Dylan Brooks is somewhat of a floor raiser, but you know, what is he ultimately, your fourth or fifth offensive option? But I think everybody sees how Phoenix has operated over these last few years. And, you know, the common trope on Twitter is, well, you basically turned Cam Johnson, Mikal Bridges, and five first rounders into Jalen Green, Dylan Brooks, the 10th pick and 5 seconds. You're not going to be able to undo those kind of wrongs, right? When you make multiple bad trades, multiple bad signings over the course of 2, 3, 4 years, you're not going to get it all back in one trade, especially for a guy who turns 37 before next season starts.
Yeah, of course. And again, it goes back to Jalen Green. If Jalen Green matures into the type of superstar that it looks like he can be, that he has shown flashes to be, then in a couple of years, Kevin Durant's going to be retired or on an albatross of a contract that he's not living up to. And Jalen Green's going to be in the All-Star game and all will be forgotten. The Phoenix Suns still have a lot of work to do. I think what this trade tells us is something that we probably already knew and maybe don't give enough credit to. And that's it. NBA trades are incredibly hard. Not only do you have to make the money work and all of that, you have to deal with those that are coming up on the end of their contracts and the player empowerment that exists in the NBA. All of that is part of the equation here. And when other teams also know that you're up against it, then you're really not in a position of leverage. So you can make it widely known like they did. Hey, Kevin Durant's on the market. And then you give away all of your leverage. You can go completely cloak and dagger like Nico Harrison did with Luka Doncic and not talk to anybody but one person who's going to fleece you. Or you can kind of go the middle route. And that middle route, I think, is a lot tougher to obtain than we give it credit for.
All right, we'll talk about the Rockets side of the deal in a moment. But first, do you want to bet smarter this football season? VSiN Pro can help you start out strong. Our new NFL betting guide drops next week, and early access means a better shot at spotting value in futures markets before the lines move. Now's the perfect time to join with our football special. For just $175, you get full VSiN Pro access from today through the Super Bowl. That's every sport we cover every day at a special early bird price. The sooner you sign up, the more value you generate. You'll be first in line for our NFL betting guide, your playbook for the season, packed with team previews, power ratings, and season-long best bets. Plus, you'll get a daily best bets email from our expert hosts and their guests, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, live and on-demand shows via the VSiN Watch app, full access to VSiN.com's analytics, tools, and pro betting systems. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe. Do it right now. You can lock in the football special for just $175. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. All right, Brandon. So the Houston side of the deal. I think we've lamented the corner that the Suns have backed themselves into enough. Suns, by the way, were 3-17 without Kevin Durant in the lineup last season. Obviously, now you solve the primary issue that we saw in round one against Golden State, which was a lack of scoring. And, you know, I think the fact that Jalen Green had the series that he did against Golden State you know, maybe that colors the way that you look at this deal. That was our last memory of Jalen Green, was him scoring in single digits in what, three or four of those games against Golden State. I assume this means Houston will now pick up the team option on Fred VanVleet. You're clearly going for it, bringing in a soon to be 37-year-old in Kevin Durant. You get one of the best scorers in NBA history. I will say though, Brandon, as an NBA nerd, I'm almost more excited for some of the ancillary parts of this deal. We get to see more Tari Eason. We get to see more Cam Whitmore. And especially, man, we get to see more Reed Shepard, who we barely saw at the NBA level last season. I am still really, really high on what Reed Shepard can bring to this Rockets team.
Well, that does sound like you. So on brand there, yeah. Nick. But Houston needed this. They were offensively impaired last season. They needed what Jalen Green could potentially be one day, but he was just too inconsistent and would go missing at times. That's not going to happen with Kevin Durant. This is a guy that can still put up 35 to 40 points on any given night. They're always going to have a bucket that they can rely on with Kevin Durant, even in Phoenix, in that sad sack situation. Durant was one of the most lethal ISO scorers in the game last year, and that should help an offense that ranked 22nd in half-court efficiency last season. And when you consider that they hold the league's best offensive rebounding rate, getting second-chance opportunities and then kicking it out to Kevin Durant is a whole lot more appealing. Amen Thompson, Alperen Şengün, these guys are still so young. It is a lot to ask those guys to carry you to a championship like OKC just asked their young guys to. But when you have a 15-time All-Star that's next to you, it's a super boost. This is an absolute win for the Houston Rockets, and I think the odds market has it right. They should be the second shortest favorite in the Western Conference as it stands right now.
Look, the only thing that worries me, and we keep harping on this, is the age. It's the injury history. KD's had really one healthy season since the Achilles tear during that final year in Golden State. That was 2 years ago, played 75 games. Other than that, you can basically pencil him in for 20-plus missed games. I don't know if that changes as he gets closer and closer to age 40. So we are looking at a condensed window, certainly, for the Houston Rockets. I mean, it's not necessarily title or bust next season, but you're not assuming that Kevin Durant is going to be on this roster and going to be playing at an all-NBA level for more than, what, two or three more years? I mean, they are making a conscious choice, I think, to accelerate that timeline. And like you said, Houston over at the DraftKings Sportsbook, plus 450 right now to win the Western Conference. Everybody chasing the Oklahoma City Thunder installed as plus 150 favorites. Minnesota, by the way, still hanging around at plus 750. You got the Lakers and the Nuggets sitting at 9-1. Again, that's to win the Western Conference next season. We're going to switch gears, talk some baseball. Eric Halterman from RotoWire will join us on the other side. Best bets for Monday's slate coming up next on Prop Points.
Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Time to talk some baseball here on Prop Points. Nick Whalen, Brandon Kravitz hanging out with you, taking you up to the top of the hour. We've got our guy Eric Halterman, our features editor, one of our baseball experts over at rotowire.com, joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. You can find all of his work, of course, over at RotoWire. You can check him out on Twitter at Eric_Halterman. Eric, welcome back to the show, man. You told us off air you got tickets to see Mizorowski taking on Paul Skeens later this week. We're going to need a full review. We might have to have you join us on BMix from the stadium if you're open to that on Wednesday afternoon. But very excited that you get to check that one out in person. I know you got plenty of plays for us for this abbreviated Monday slate. Travel day for a lot of teams after a busy weekend. Let's start with the Cubs and the Cardinals. This one in St. Louis, Ben Brown taking on Matthew Liberatore. You're looking at a money line play and you're looking at a case prop for Ben Brown.
Yeah, I just can't quit Ben Brown, even though his ERA says I probably should. He's one of the starters with one of the bigger gaps between his ERA and the ERA estimators in the league right now. And I tend to believe that pitchers are going to regress towards those ERA estimators. I think you need more than just half a season to say that this is a guy who's just never going to meet those more advanced metrics. It's a 5.57 ERA, but there is a key here, which is that Ben Brown has been a two-pitch pitcher for most of his major league career, but he's introduced the kick change this year. That's the trendy new version of a changeup that a lot of guys are adding this season. He's not throwing it a lot yet, but 8% of the time over his last four starts, he's allowed two or fewer earned runs in three of those four. been a much better stretch for him recently. He's always had the strikeouts and not walked too many guys, but I think when you're a two-pitch guy, it's easier for batters to eliminate one of them and tee off on the other. As long as there's a third offering that they just have to think about, even if he doesn't throw it that much, even if it's not amazing, results so far have been unremarkable but totally fine, I think that's going to help Ben Brown a lot. So I'd like him to get at least five strikeouts. I don't think that'll be hard at all. And I'd like the Cubs money line as well, going up against Matt Liberatore, who had a 2.73 ERA in his first 10 starts, was one of the surprises of the early part of the season. That ERA has jumped to 8.10 across his last four starts, much more similar to what we would expect. So I like Ben Brown a lot more than Matt Liberatore, despite their current ERAs. So I like the Cubs, and I like some Ben Brown props in this one.
Eric, I was looking at Cal Raleigh over the weekend at Wrigley. Winds blowing out to the outfield, and he was red hot this weekend. On Sunday, he was plus 105 to hit a home run. I thought that number is way too short. And then there he goes, and he hits another one. He put up four home runs this weekend at Wrigley. He's now got a four home run lead on Aaron Judge for the most jacks in the league. Is he a value play, if that's even possible at this price, at plus 125 to lead the league in home runs? Or is there another way to attack what he's been doing throughout the course of the season?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. A couple weeks ago when I was hosting with Nick, I tossed him out as a very long shot MVP prediction. Basically, I think with the way Aaron Judge is hitting, though, you basically are betting on Judge to get injured if you're going to take Raleigh for MVP, but he's got a shot. I would still prefer Judge to lead the league in homers. But hey, if you want some action on Raleigh, how about today against Bailey Ober? I would like a lot of the Mariners hitters, and Raleigh more than all of them. Bailey Ober just seems broken. His velocity is down to 90.6 miles per hour on his fastball. The only righty among qualified starters with lower velocity in the league right now is Kyle Hendricks. Not exactly the company you want to be keeping at this stage of Hendricks's career. Ober the last few years actually had an above average strikeout rate despite pretty low velocity. But now that velocity is even lower, the strikeout rate's down to 18%. He's always been a guy who struggled to keep the ball on the ground, but it was an acceptable 34% the last couple of years. He's down to a 29% ground ball rate this season. That means a lot of balls in the air, which means hitters like Cal Raleigh could definitely clear the fence in this one. So I like the Mariners home run props. I like the Mariners money line. I do not like the way Bailey Ober has been trending lately. So I would look for multiple ways to attack that one today.
Cal Raleigh, by the way, down to plus 550 to win the American League MVP. Started to feel like a two-man race in that one. Bobby Witt next on the list at 80-1. Jose Ramirez, 100-1. Aaron Judge still minus 2,000. He's got a cushion, but Raleigh, at the very least, making this thing interesting as we reach the midway point of the season. Eric, I know you have your eye on Braves-Mets tonight out at Citi Field. Spencer Schwellenbach taking on Paul Blackburn. How are you attacking this one?
Yeah, I think it's a huge advantage on the mound for Atlanta, which means the first five for Atlanta looks pretty attractive in this one, plus 105 for them to be leading after five innings. You could just take Atlanta on the money line as well, but when the biggest advantage comes in those first five innings, might as well attack it that way. Schwellenbach, a 3.26 ERA on the year, which is right in line with or even slightly behind some of the ERA estimators. His xFIP is all the way down at 2.96. Not an elite strikeout guy, but above average at 24%. Combine that with just a 4% walk rate and an above average ground ball rate as well. Schwellenbach looks very reliable to me. And Paul Blackburn, the opposite on the other side, has got a 6.92 ERA with just a 13% strikeout rate this year. In his best period of his career, the last 3 years, it was still just a 4.43 ERA. He's a number 5-6 starter. Schwellenbach looks like an ace at this point, or at worst, a number two. So I definitely like Atlanta in the first five innings, if not the whole way.
And the Mets have lost 8 of their last 9 games. I'm with you there. I'm taking Braves money line tonight. We've now seen 2 starts from Shohei Ohtani since returning to the mound. Limited action in both, but what have you thought of the way that he looks out there? And when do you think we're going to see Ohtani in full force on the mound?
I think it's probably going to be a while until he's in full force, but I guess we can just be happy that he's getting by through his first couple outings. It's really just a matter of innings, though. This is essentially a rehab assignment for Shohei Ohtani. Everybody else would be throwing a couple one-inning stints down at, you know, extended spring if not in, you know, low level minors where he is in his recovery. I think that the Dodgers are playing for October. They play for October basically year round. They're one of the only teams that can be pretty much sure that they're in the playoffs from the start of the year. I don't really think they care how many innings Shohei Ohtani throws in June and July, or even really August. I think they hope that he's going to be fully ramped up for six innings by October. We'll probably see him, you know, maybe a month, 6 weeks from now, starting to get those five, six inning starts. But I think it's going to be a while. I don't think that the Dodgers are counting on much from Ohtani on the mound. But because he's a two-way player, he doesn't even cost them an extra roster spot here to have a pitcher who can, you know, only throw one or two innings at a time. So I think the Dodgers are perfectly fine with how things are going, but I wouldn't expect him to be used as a conventional starter anytime soon.
Eric, we mentioned when we brought you on that you are seeing Jacob Mizrowski in person on Wednesday going up against Paul Skeens. Yeah, I couldn't help but check out the NL Rookie of the Year odds board over the weekend after another sterling outing for Mizrowski. He's now pitched, what, 11 total innings, and that is enough for him to now be installed as the NL Rookie of the Year favorite at DraftKings over at plus 190. Are we jumping the gun a little bit on Mizrowski in that market?
I don't think it's actually crazy to have him as the favorite. I mean, the NL Rookie of the Year favorites, Roky Sasaki, Dylan Cruz, heading into the year, they've both been bad and then hurt. They're basically off the board at this point. Mizrowski looks amazing, but he's not the guy I would bet here. I would look more at Chase Burns, who is about to make his debut on Tuesday for the Reds, actually considered probably a slightly better prospect than Mizrowski, similar elite bat-missing stuff, and he's only two starts behind Mizrowski, right? So when you look at their year-end numbers, they're going to look pretty similar in terms of the number of innings they're able to throw. You can get Burns at much longer odds than Mizrowski. Really excited to see Mizrowski, but I don't know if plus 190 is very good value at the moment.
Yeah, Chase Burns, 20-1 right now for that NL Rookie of the Year award. That is sight unseen, but he is number 10 in our guy James Anderson's prospect rankings over at rotowire.com. Eric, awesome stuff, man. Appreciate you giving out some plays for Monday's slate. Have fun at Miller Park. I still call it Miller Park. I will always call it Miller Park on Wednesday, and we'll check in with you soon, man. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. I call it Miller Park by accident as well, too, so you're in company there.
There we have it. Eric Halterman, everybody. Check him out at RotoWire. Check him out on Twitter at Eric_Halterman. There's a new sports betting market in town, and it's called Xcuta. That's spelled X-C-U-T-T-A. Xcuta is a sports Calcutta combining the adrenaline of live auctions and the strategy of sports prognostication. You can create your own Xcuta auctions for you and your crew for any sport or any sporting event. We're talking football, baseball, basketball, tennis, golf, the Super Bowl, the World Series, March Madness, Wimbledon, even your own local golf tournament. Create your own private or public auctions. You can create secondary markets for aftermarket buying and selling. Over 1,000 teams, player, and drivers in the database with the ability for you to add more. Free practice auctions are available now. They're running daily at 3, 6, and 9 p.m. over at xcuta.com. And for a 3-month bidding subscription, email support at xcuta.com and mention VSiN. xcuta.com. It's the future of future wagering. We get ahead to break. We're going to talk some fantasy football when we come back. Players we're targeting, players we're avoiding right now. Fantasy football talk coming your way next. You're on Prop Points.
Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back into Prop Points here on VSiN. Nick Whalen, Brandon Kravitz here with you, taking you up to the top of the hour. Coming up at 3 p.m. Eastern, as always, make it rain with Adam Schein. He's going to have Greg Peterson from VSiN.com joining the show to give out some best bets in Major League Baseball. So make sure you stick around for that. Brandon, we want to close out the show with a little bit of NFL talk, a little bit of fantasy football talk. The NBA's wrapped up. I know we have the draft coming our way on Wednesday and Thursday, but we are dangerously close to switching into football mode, guys like you and I. So we want to go through some of our early fantasy targets, guys that we look at the ADP, we look at some mock drafts, and we say, I'm willing to jump ADP. I'm going to reach maybe a round or two for these players. These are going to be our guys this season. Guys we'll have on 3, 4, 5 different fantasy teams. So we each compiled some lists of players that we've been drafting, players we plan to draft plenty of. We'll start with yours. We'll start with the top player on your list, Jackson Smith and Jigba. If I remember correctly, Brandon, you were in on JSN last season. That paid off handsomely. Gonna have to pay a little bit of a higher price this time around. A lot of changes, of course, this offseason for the Seattle Seahawks. Going off the board right now is a wide receiver 12.
A mega trade in the home dynasty league where I brought in Jackson Smith and Jigba, and I hit that at the exact right time. So I'm all in on him, but I love him in redraft as well. I love the talent, slight upgrade at quarterback, in my opinion, going to Sam Darnold. I'm hoping that Cooper Kupp actually creates a bit of a discount on him, but it shouldn't impact his value. It sure didn't for Puka Nacua. And besides, they operate in different parts of the field anyway. JSN went from 63 grabs, 628 yards, and 4 touchdowns in year 1 to 100 catches, over 1,000 yards, and 6 touchdowns. That's year-over-year progression. Now he enters the season as the focal point of the offense for the first time. I'm all in on this guy. To me, he's a top 10 wide receiver. I'm very bullish on JSN for that reason.
Is there any concern about Sam Darnold repeating the type of season that he had in Minnesota?
Oh, for sure. I mean, that has to be there. But I do think he showed that he can at least be, maybe he's not going to be a double-digit wins quarterback, but I think he also showed something that we were concerned about going into last year as it pertained to Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison. Can this guy be a fantasy-positive quarterback? The answer to that is yes, and I think that that kind of thing is more repeatable than wins and losses for somebody like Sam Darnold. He'll probably have more turnovers this upcoming season than he had last year, but that just means they'll get the ball back again, and perhaps we can give it another shot. I also really like Jaylen Waddle. It's a buy-low opportunity, especially if Tyreek Hill is removed from the equation. He was terrible last year. There's really nothing I could tell you to make you feel good about the season he's coming off of. Jalen Tolbert had as many fantasy points as Jaylen Waddle did a year ago, but even in a down season, we're still talking about a guy with a 3-year average of over 1,000 receiving yards, 5 touchdowns per season. That kind of production, if he's able to get back to it, is going to put him firmly inside of the top 20. And right now, over at rotowire.com, he's wide receiver 30. So that's what I'm banking on, a little bit of value.
I'll give you a couple receivers from my list before we move on to running backs, Brandon. And my first guy goes about a round ahead of JSN on average, but I like that I could comfortably get him still in the second round. You know, it opens up the flexibility in the first round. If you want to start with a running back, you know, you have your options at wide receiver. And this is a name I continue to click on. It's Drake London, wide receiver 9 right now, according to ADP figures at the NFFC over the last 3 weeks. It's a guy who finished as the wide receiver 5. Last season when the Atlanta Falcons had a quarterback who could barely throw the ball for over 75% of said season. Am I reading too much into two huge games at the end of the year with Michael Penix? It's very possible, but hard to ignore. 7 for 106 on 13 targets, 10 for 187 and 2 touchdowns on 18 targets over the final 2 games of the year. 31 targets for Drake London in those 2 games. I think there's similar upside here to a lot of the receivers that you have to pay a real premium for in round 1. You know, the Amon-Ra St. Browns of the world, Puka Nacua, Malik Nabers, even my guy, Brian Thomas. There's not a huge gap, of course, between those ADPs, but opening up that flexibility, if I want to go running back in round 1, knowing I could still fall back on a player like Drake London. That is a selection I've been making quite a bit. I'm also back in on Jakobi Meyers. I know we're going a little bit deep here, Brandon. We've talked about some bigger names. All Jakobi Meyers does every single season, he's going wide receiver 39 right now, by the way. All he does is beat his ADP with bad quarterback play. He was the wide receiver 19 a season ago, wide receiver 24 the year before that, wide receiver 29 each of the 2 years prior. His starting quarterbacks during that run: Gardner Minshew, Aiden O'Connell, Desmond Ridder, Jimmy G, Brian Hoyer, Mac Jones, Bailey Zappi was throwing the ball to Jakobi Meyers. He still has finished as a top 25 receiver on average over the last 4 years. Should get an upgrade in terms of quarterback play with Geno Smith now in Vegas. Does he see a drop in volume? Perhaps. Raiders threw the ball a ton last season, partially because they had no running game, partially because they were trailing. But I think the quality of his targets should improve. He had only 14 targets in the red zone last season. And we forget Jakobi Meyers, one of the better underrated big play threats at the wide receiver position. 20 catches last year that went for 20 plus yards. That was more than Jamar Chase. It was more than Drake London, more than St. Brown, more than JSN. I could keep going. Again, I don't think we're looking at a 140, 150 target season. I think the Raiders want to be a more balanced team than that, but there's touchdown upside. There's consistency when it comes to Jacoby Myers. I think we're getting a steal right now with him going as the wide receiver 39. Let's take a look at some running backs, Brandon. And I'm interested in some of the players on your list here. The one that really jumped out to me was Brian Robinson Jr. Nobody is talking about Brian Robinson in Washington.
He's basically the running back equivalent at a cheaper price to Drake London. I think some of these guys just get slapped with a non-sexy tag. You know, you're not going to get a reaction from anybody in the room on draft day. And those guys tend to become values for those that don't care to get up the rise out of your friends or those online when you're drafting. I think he's way undervalued, especially given his nose for the end zone and how much he's used in RPO situations in that offense. I wish he was used more in the pass game, but this is part of the reason why he's the low ceiling, high floor player that he is, that I think where you're drafting him, I love those kind of players. We're always talking about targeting upside. Sometimes you have to draft guys that stabilize your lineup. This guy had 8 touchdowns last season. And now the biggest factor here is he enters a contract year. Give me a player who is already productive, who's playing for that big check in a really good offense. Gotta love Brian Robinson Jr. for exactly those reasons.
You know, one guy at running back who I've been really taking a ton of in best ball lately goes even later than Brian Robinson. That's Jordan Mason with the Minnesota Vikings. Obviously a clear backup right now, but a backup to an aging Aaron Jones, who's going to turn 31 midway through the season. And yes, Aaron Jones stayed healthy last year. I mean, that was kind of the big question mark. I don't know if he repeats that again. I would not bet on Aaron Jones playing 16, 17 games. I think the Vikings brought in Jordan Mason for a reason. I mean, Jones really, really struggled in the red zone last season. Had 24 carries inside the 10-yard line, converted just 3 of those into touchdowns. Minnesota went out of its way to go get Jordan Mason this offseason. Kevin O'Connell went as far as to refer to this backfield as a 1A, 1B structure. And on top of all this, Jordan Mason is just a really, really good player. Whenever the opportunity has been there, he has stepped up in San Francisco. He was 3rd among qualified running backs last season in rushing yards over expected per attempt. Even on a week-to-week basis, you know, early in the season when Aaron Jones is healthy, he's probably operating as the number one, you're getting a guy in Jordan Mason who could still provide lower-end value as a backup. There's still going to be touchdown production to be had in that offense. And look, if and when Aaron Jones misses time next season, you are walking your way into a starting running back. And again, to me, last year was a best-case health season for Aaron Jones, who moves into his 30s this year. All right, we got best bets coming your way to finish out the show. They are brought to you, as always, by the good folks over at GBank. Introducing the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VSiN. All you have to do is open a GBank Visa Signature credit card, and in the first 90 days, deposit and play through $1,000 at First Bet to trigger the $500 trifecta. You get $200 in cashback rewards on your GBank Visa Signature credit card. First Bet will give you a $100 deposit match, and VSiN completes the trifecta with a free VSiN Pro subscription that brings you through October 31st, a $200 value. It's the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VSiN. Head to VSiN.com/GBank. That's VSIN.com/GBank. This one-time promotion is limited to customers opening a new account in response to this offer. It will not apply to requests to convert existing accounts. Apply today over at VSiN.com/GBank. Terms and conditions apply. All right, Brandon, your GBank best bet of the night. Let's hear it.
Let's go. Cubs Cardinals over 9 runs scored. The bats have been hot for both of these teams. Nolan Arenado, a hit and a run in each of his last 3. And this is going to be Ben Brown's first meeting with the Cardinals this year on the road. Mm-hmm. Weather's hot. We got wind blowing out of Busch Stadium. So I like what we're seeing here. Also Matthew Liberatore, an ERA over 8.40 over his last 3 starts.
All right, I like it, and I like the price. Give me the Brewers team total over 4.5 tonight. I'm going to be in the house taking on the Pirates. Got to have some action going. Brewers are red hot right now. 35 runs over the weekend in that 3-game sweep of Minnesota. They've gone over this number now in 4 straight. That's going to close out the Monday edition of Prop Points. Keep it right here on VSiN. Make it rain with Adam Schein coming your way next.